And hello again, I'm Frieda Morrison, and welcome to my garden and my wee greenhouse. Not only that, but this is our start of our very first series of Grow Radio for 2021. And let me show you a fit I've been working at in the Grow Garden here. We're inside the greenhouse again because it's drizzling as usual outside. And that's been happening for days round about here, just rain. We've even had hailstones. Now this month and next is the most important time for birdies bringing up their brood, and what a challenge it's been for them this year. We've had big snowstorms, ice, and some places near far away here reporting 25 nests, so minus temperatures of frost, the most on record for years. And as I said, we've now just had days and weeks of rain, and as I said again, hailstones, near that long ago, and it's supposed to be summer. So, I've been sowing seed that will hopefully provide plants and flowers for the birdies. I've sowed a few trays of plugs with wild flower seeds. And the plugs are looking good. Now, last time I tried to grow wild flowers, I just threw them around in a bare bit of grun and hoped they would grow. No chance. I think the cras and the does I had parties ate all my seed and nothing grew. So this time, I'm planting plugs that have the seed already sprouted. So the seeds are going into the plugs, watered them for a few weeks, and up they come, and they're looking really healthy. Sprouted, healthy plants. Not quite ready to plant out yet, so I'll grow them on in some ground here, inside the greenhouse. I've planted some out already, and they're looking good. And just so you can, I get help, and I'm nail it off with only mistakes. I have a garden helper called Jordy, if I popped in early this morning to check on my tomatoes. And I got a row for not taking off the side shoots. And then disaster. He spotted something else. I'm experimenting with growing Brussels sprouts in here. And Abdi says I cannot do that in a greenhouse. And lo and behold, Jordy spotted Ian that he said was, and I quote, hanging locket. It had neck rot and it was hanging locket. My Brussels sprouts hanging locket. And see, that was caused maybe with the kale or maybe you were watering. That caused the stalk at the neck to rot. Hanging locket, Brussels sprouts. Picht, fit in the front. I will persevere. But now it's time to join the team in our virtual studios. They're somewhere in the zone out there. So join me for the first episode of Grow Radio 2021. Come on, doggies. Come on, dogs. Come on. Babs, come on. Let's go. And welcome to our virtual gardens, but not our virtual gardeners. They are very real. Let me introduce you to the team, ready, willing, and able to sort out your gardens, whether big or small, pots, windy boxes, or nothing. Just enjoy the banter and the fresh air. And we've got plenty tea for armchair gardeners. So, the team. The head gardener himself, past curator at the Botanic Gardens in Edinburgh and chair of the Open Garden Scheme. Welcome, David Mitchell in Edinburgh.
Hi, Frieda. It's grand to be back speaking about gardens again, now that winter's a memory.
You'll enjoy that. You'll enjoy that. And in Edinburgh, we'll soon slaughter, of course, an Afakeen gardener, Richie Werner. Have you fine, Richie?
Aye. We're grand, Frieda. Thanks.
Family fine. Well, you said fine, but you're not quite fine.
We have been in the hospital and that with the wee one, just for a wee chesty, whoopy, coffee thing, but she's all good. So we're happy. We're brah. Dana away.
Have you had time to get in the garden?
Well, though? I have. I've been sort of killing my standard roses accidentally. Well, they're certainly looking affy wabbit. So I had to move a rose out of a barrel that's been well established for about 20 years. But it was right in against a wall in a pot. And I decided to stick the roots at the bottom of the pot and threw the flagstones at the bottom. So I had to kind of snip it and move it so I get the wall done. But the whole thing's kind of like getting just leaning over and looking awfully sad. So I hope I've no lost it. You know, we'll see.
We'll see. And in Trinent, the proud custodian. Oh, a new allotment. Come in, Steve Byrne.
Hi, Frieda. Who's Abadie?
Oh, we're a being fine, I think. Well, I think Richie's probably struggling a wee bit with the bearings, but Abdiel seems to be fine. That's you. And in one short sentence, Steve, because we'll hear mair in a minty, is it Agan according to plan in the allotment?
It is new. It was a sair fecht in April, as Abdi kens, but managed to get maist things in the grun new, so we're canna wa.
Oh, great. We'll hear mair later, as I said. And the star of every show, the only person that can actually silence us are, come in, Ur Cook, Féilochaber, Claire Patterson.
Hiya, Frieda.
I know. Fish on the menu this time, Claire.
Today we've got some well garlic butter for kirking up your dinners. We've got something with roast asparagus. We've got a frittata with spinach and new tatties. And then to finish off, a rhubarb mess.
Okay, I'll ask you, Mary, about the wild garlic butter when it comes to that time, because I've got a lovely lot of wild garlic sprouting bonnie in just outside the greenhouse. Lovely.
Brilliant.
No, I need to explain the format. A wee bitty. We have gardening questions on email, and a new thing, we have gardening questions recorded by folk on their phones and sent in to us, and a new record button that you can find on our Grow Radio webpage. It's www.growradio.com. www.growradio.com. So Ian should get the gist of this new format. We encourage you to record your questions and send them in to us here. So let's get started. Before we start, can I just make a little statement? I had my second COVID jab last night, and I might be a bit kind of scatterbrained and a brain fog going on. But we don't detain the differences.
I didn't like to say it.
I am. I'm hearing kind of like a 5-second delay in my head sort of thing. Okay, that's my excuse for the day. But I thought, fair enough. Detain the difference. Okay. Right, first question. We start with an audio question. This is for Gail Nixon in Braemar.
Hello, I'm phoning from rural Aberdeenshire. I live in a village that is about 300 metres above sea level, and I find it really hard to think of things to grow and sustain in my garden. I'm really looking to make my garden really bright and colourful, and I'm wondering if you would have any recommendations for things that would survive with the slightly colder spring and autumn, and that perhaps would come back year after year. Many thanks. Bye.
Right, David.
Aye. Well, those are a cold bit to bide, you can, but there's a lot of things that would be good friends in your garden, especially once they get established. And a lot of them are all favourites, things like the white beam Sorbus aria or the mountain ash Sorbus occiparia, both of which have bonny cultivars like lutescence and shearwater seedlings. You'll no beat better small trees for on a garden. They're good for birds, great flowers, good fruits. Don't forget the birches either, and I'm not just talking about the native yins, the exotic species. Again, there's yin, Betula utilis, subspecies albicinensis, durinbos, fit a name that is, but it's white as snow, the trunk. It's a beautiful thing. Dogwoods are great, things like Cornus alba, the Philadelphus, there's a lot of them brought. Oh, there's yin of my favourites is called Belle Etoile. You can smell it for about 6-10 feet away. Lovely, lovely white flowers. And then there's the wee native willow, Salix lanata, the woolly willow. It's got lovely compact habit, nice silver foliage, it gans gold in the autumn, brawny wee catkins, one of the spireas. And then there's big things like Cotina scogeria, royal purple. And then wee things, run about you. Think about all the different types of heathers, different kinds of Coluna vulgaris. I mean, don't be worried about biding at that elevation in a cold climate. There's lots of stuff you can grow, and you'll hear a broad garden if you go about it direct road.
Right, thanks, Dave, and thanks to Gail for that recording. I've asked Gail to be with us this particular programme because they've had it really bad up in Braemar. 25 nicks of frost in April. That's the most on record for years. But as you say, we can do a lot of things to help. So that's encouraging. Thanks for that. I've got an email question here for Caroline Walker and Inverurie again. I said, we've had a lot of wet weather. Soil is still sodden, she says. Can she plant anything new?
Well, you can abide in Edinburgh. And again, what she's talking about, because the grun's been rick glary lately at times in the last month. My best advice is kind of queer, like, keep off the soil unless you really hit to work it. If you do hit to work it, to plant and do other jobs, then stand on a plank or a bit of a board to do it. It's awkward. You look a bit like a ballet dancer with a spade, but it can be done. And, you know, that way you'll get things going on. I mean, I can, it's not been easy lately. And another thing is to try and change what you're doing and when you're doing it to work with the weather. If you get a good sunny day, get out and do it. Or if you're, that's easy if you're not working full time, like, but if even if you're working full time, instead of sitting watching the Google Box at night, get out into the garden, get out into the allotment.
Work with the weather. Thank you, Dave, indeed. Hi. Right now, I'm going to take our minds off the glary weather and the glary mud and speak to, of course, the star of the show, as I said, or cook. And she's the only one that can actually silence us all as we listen with great interest. The only sound usually comes through the Edinburgh studio direction. It's a certain familiar gastronomic rumbling, say, Richie Werner. Right. Right, Claire, give us your first two recipes.
Hi, Frida. So today I'm starting with something to use up some wild garlic. I've been out foraging for it recently, and it's always good to find ways to store it and use it. So I made it into a butter, which you can freeze and for up to about a month, and then you just slice off what you need when you need it. So you get some softened butter, chuck in a couple of chopped up handfuls of your wild garlic leaves and a bit of salt. And then the way I would use that is I'd either push it under the skin of the chicken before you put it in for roasting so it kind of infuses into the meat. Or you can pop that on top of some fish or some shellfish before you grill it. And then incidentally, if there's any flowers that you've got with it as well, garlic, make sure you save them, don't you throw them away, because they're lovely in salads or to sort of sprinkle over at the
yes,
end.
I like them. Aye.
Really beautiful.
Well, I've been kind of really experimenting because I've got a lot of wild garlic leaves. Ransom, I think. Ransoms, aye. Now, do you see the... This is a stupid question, but I'm going to have to answer. But how fine do you hate to chop the leaves? Do you put the wild garlic, you mix it in a bowl into a kind of paste, and then do you put it into a fridge to harden it off? What do you do?
Aye, that's right. I mean, right at the start, when it's really, really tender, you can probably be a wee bit coarser with the chopping. Like as we're coming into the season now, I would maybe spend another minute or two just getting it nice and fine so it mixes through, because the leaves will be a wee bit coarser, I think, as they come into the kind of flowering season.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, and then once you've done that, you can just sort of roll it up into a log with the butter and then into the freezer, slice it off. So the next thing is for the roasted asparagus with a crispy poached egg. And for me, it always feels like summer's on the way, and it's been quite slow coming this year when the asparagus arrives. And asparagus is lovely with eggs. So this is perfect if you've got your own eggs, because you need them to be right fresh to poach them. And you'd poach the eggs for maybe about 3 minutes, just until they're just set enough that you can handle them. You pop them into iced water, chill them down, and then drain them, coat them with seasoned flour, then beaten egg, then some bread crumbs or the panko crumbs, which are the great big ones you get, which are great, and put that aside. For the asparagus, you just season it, wee bit of oil, wee bit of salt and pepper, and just pop it in the hot oven for about 10 minutes or until it's just tender, but not too tender, if you know what I mean. And then before you're ready to serve, you deep fry your eggs so they're runny in the middle and then they're crispy on the outside and they're absolutely lovely.
Oh, no.
Deep fried eggs. You've got it's kind of like a scotch egg on the outside and a poached egg on the inside. That and it brilliant. Splits open, comes over your asparagus, and it's absolutely lovely.
Wow.
Worth the faff.
Look at that. Look at, I can somebody will be listening very intently. Steve Byrne loves asparagus. He keeps sending me emails saying, asparagus is in good season at the moment. Get your asparagus. Thank you, Claire, for that. And I'm sorry to have brain fog about my wild garlic butter thing. You probably mentioned they had to put it in the freezer right at the beginning, but I missed that bit. It's okay. I'm back on the zone again. Right. It was with great pleasure that we welcome our Scotch Radio team member, Taylor Gerdin and Throng. Nae only is he a keen gardener, but he has just got the keys to his first ever allotment. Congratulations and welcome, Steve Byrne!
Thanks, Frida.
Oh, I know. Before we go any further and hear your questions, paint the picture. When did you take over?
Well, the allotments is a new who's in the state. I say new, it's maybe been in about 10 years. And nowadays, when house builders are putting new houses in, they hate to do something for the community. So they put in a bit of land with about, jings, there must be about 30-odd plots or maybe a bit more. And I hear a plot that's about 60 metre square, sort of 6 by 10 metre. The problem was when I said aye by email, I hadn't actually seen the thing. And we get up there the next day and, of course, it was just overgrown. The poor fellow that had had it before, I think he'd had illness in the family and it just hadn't been looked after for a long while. So there was a hail queen of old cabbages, there was rasps all the way through the ground, there was couch grass or rack as folk McKinnon Scots. There was a corner full of rasps and currants of all kinds, gooseberries, loganberries, all just growing through one another. So with a whole load of kind of digging and cutting things out to try and make a bit of space for Athen. But aye, after a wee while, we just thought, gosh, we're going to do a bit of more, kind of make a bit of more progress. I mean, luckily it was cold, so we weren't really going to be planting on anything. So we had a bit of time. We just got it at Easter. And we had a bit of time really to prepare the ground for planting, because obviously we couldn't do anything with the cold. But after a while, we thought, we better get a man in.
Not just a man.
My pal Scotty Gardner, that folk maybe kins, bothy ballad singer. But he, gardener by name, gardener by nature, that's what he does in his working life and all. So he had just acquired a new rotavator doofer.
Whoa.
And he came up and get out of the ground. We gave him a wee bit of a sort of testing ground for it. So there was an East Lothian pluing match of sorts that Saturday morning. So 2 hours later, he'd the whole thing totally just ploughed and it made it a pleasure to work new. So,
okay. Are you putting down any weed suppressant or any kind of cover at all to kind of get on top of bitties?
We'd thought about that. Our neighbour at the other plot just across the road had done the same, but they'd put it down for a long time. But to be honest with you, we just, the ground is weel enough. We got most of the stuff. We did a bit by hand the first week or two, then we got Scotty in. So, we've just got on and planted things with wee bits of kind of seeds and weeds coming through the new, but we'll just deal with it as best we can. We just thought to get on and see what would grow.
Quite right. Right. And of course, I need to say that we'll have the pleasure of your company through the season. But for starters, here we go. Fitch, your first question.
Okay. Well, with the cold weather, I was after coverings of some kind for the plants. After about 3 or 4 weeks, we started putting things out in late April. And I mind it, a few years ago, I got ahead of some plastic bell cloches, or cloches as Scott cried them, in the middle aisle of a certain supermarket. But we didn't have them any mare. So I get to buy mare locally, and I couldn't get them any place. And I was just wondering, have bell cloches fallen out of fashion? And what's an alternative for small rows of young veg plants where you can't really fit in a polytunnel, even any of the small growings?
Okay, Dave.
Well, there's a whine of things that you can use, Steve. The cheapest option is horticultural fleece. It's practical and you put it down and that's it. The plastic bell jars you're talking about, I did see them locally in the Lothians and Twerthy Garden Centres, a whine of them lying about. There's a company called Marshall Seeds, marshallsgarden.com. You can send to them for them and you'll get 3 big ones for about £13. Don's a grand catalogue. It's full of magic stuff for the garden and allotment and lots of advice and good flowers. It's even got seed tatties and nothing in it. You can also buy a lot of the bell cloches online for other folk. But I'm going to give you another idea. An old-fashioned one. And with a new allotment, it might be worth thinking about investing new in the wire frames that you can mark traditional barn cloches out of, kind of glass ends. You get high ends and low ends. Mm-hmm. If you look at firms like Garden and Wood, they stock the wires. And there's another company, Hibbett of Oswestry, they hate them too. I mean, the thing about the cloches, they're not easy to put together, but once you learn how, you can use them year after year. I mean, I'm still using the wires that belonged to my grandfather, and he got them just after the Second World War. You'll have to cut the glass for them yourself. There's an awful good video on YouTube about a couple of folk, actually, funnily enough, a lad doing in New Zealand making up barn cloches. And if I was at your age with a new allotment, I would be investing in the wires and cutting some glass and getting myself half a dozen, because you can move them about, you can open them and ventilate them. If you break a sheet of glass, it's easy to pick it up and cut another in. Mm-hmm. And they're no plastic. And for me, only thing that's in the gear and that doesn't involve plastic's good.
Uh-huh. Fair enough. Mm-hmm.
Right, we have time for another question, Steve.
So, back to the weather again, I suppose. Our apple trees, and I've put a couple of apple trees in the allotment as well because there's other fruit trees in a boot. They've all flowered gae late this year, so I'm fear that they'll no pollinate a' that weel. And there's no much to be doing about muckle trees, but for folk like me that has a few young trees in their garden or their allotment, far they can reach the blossom easily. Is there anything you can do to help the pollination?
Well, as you can and most folk can, apples are insect pollinated mainly by bees. And the most important thing you can do is to make sure that you've got compatible varieties. Mm. And there's a list of the flowering groups, the RHS here, Grannion Online, that will tell you about that, and it's available for nothing. Making sure that they're sheltered due to the cold wind is very important, especially in exposed situations. Does a lot to help pollination. Another old trick that the old gardeners used to do was to hear a crab apple or two about the place.
That's interesting.
So it was bonny to look at, but it provides pollen over a long period of time.
Okay. I think there is even further doing.
I used to grow peaches and pears and nectarines, and we often pollinated them by tickling them with a rabbit's tail on the end of a cane. So if you've only got a few cordons or step-over trees or espaliers, you could easily pollinate them again with a rabbit's tail, or if you want to leave the rabbits alone, you just need a big soft-haired artist's moppy brush. And if you do it first thing in the morning, just go and feed in through to another way. Again, it only takes you 10 minutes. That might be worth a try.
Fair enough. Let's go.
Right, thank you, Dave, and thank you, Steve. Bide with us. Next bit will be right in your barra. And we've just nae lang had the RSPB's Great Garden Birdwatch, and the results of the fit birds are in most of our gardens. The first three most popular birds in the Scottish garden were the spuggies, or the spugs, followed by starlings, then the blue-tit. Now, Steve, Dave, Claire, Richie, gie's a few Scots names for birds. Steve first.
I suppose I would tack in that comes from a sang that I didn't ken as a bairn, but it's in the sang The Yellow on the Broom, the Yorlin, the yellow hammer, the yellow yite. Seen a few of them going about lately on the ferms. And another one I like is the Gled. It comes from the song Killiecrankie and Athol Gled for the red kite. A red kite is a bird that appears a lot far. My wife comes from in Germany. It's seen in the breeding grounds.
We've got a few of them up here as well,
right? And then the last one I suppose would be, isn't that common, but it's more in poetry, is the Goudspink, which is a bra name for the goldfinch.
A bonny name, the Goudspink. I love that. Claire, what about you? What's your favourite Scots words for birds?
Well, I like that one, the Goudspink. I love those. They're absolutely stunning. I'm going to say a cushy-doo, because we've had two wandering around the yard at work for the last few weeks, looking quite out of place and very pleased with themselves. So.
Richie, have you got any Scots names for birds?
I don't know, Ken. I always mind my old pop would talk about plovers, and I think a plover's a wood pigeon, but I was never sure.
No, plover's near a wood pigeon.
Like, what a plover is, but he was always talking about, oh, this the body plovers.
I think some folk might have cried a lapwing a plover at some time.
I was just thinking, because the lapwing has got different names, the chuchet, and the peewit, and the plover.
Because most plovers you get down at the sea, like they're wee waders.
Ah, well, he grew up in Dunbar, which
all
is
right, okay.
Down as York.
Well,
so that would
a Gowden plover or that kind of thing, aye.
Aye.
Oh, very
there's
cool.
A heap of
Jeez,
words,
thanks, Steve.
Heap of names for gulls as well. We call them pules, and then there's the skerries. What else can you think of? Any other bird names? David?
Well, because it's funny, you boys talking about the sea there.
Aye.
You know my favourites, you can, it's the black duiker. For the cormorant, you kind of way it flees along and just goes sploot and doing in. Kitty Neddy is a common sandpiper.
Mm.
And the silver plover is a note. And then chirly piper, again for the oyster catcher. And stilties for the reed shank. And then another thing I like is Wally Goo for the hern gull. I'll leave you to think about that because you can what it does to your car.
Oh, aye, the Wally Goo. Oh, and I just remembered the whap. The whapping's sometimes called the whap, so it's a chuchet, peewit, the whap. Sometimes
aye, whap was a word for the lapwing where I come from.
It's aye. A curlew for I come from.
Curlew, aye.
Aye.
Is a curlew in the lapwing the same bird, though?
No, no. Curlew would be a whap where I come from.
Well, see, a whap is the curlew in for you come from. Right, I've got you. Okay. Right, this is the most important time for birds and looking after their young brood. Oh, me, as a wee baby bird inside the greenhouse the other day. It was just the most beautiful thing. It was a wee baby greenfinch. And, of course, as we gear up for the Environmental Global Summit in Glasgow in November, we'll be getting dug into some mare-wise again and mare environmentally. Speaking to Dave about that, how can we be good to wildlife in our gardens? Right, over to you, Dave.
Oh, there's an awful lot that you can do, Frida, you can, but I think the most important message is to be consistent. Personally, I prefer to manage my feeding all year round. I don't like to just do it and then forget about it and do it and forget about it. I like to be consistent. I think I always make sure that I provide water as well as the feeders. I use wire mesh feeders for peanuts and seed feeders for seed. Clean the feeders regularly. I clean the bird table regularly. I use fat blocks for in wire cages rather than them wee plastic kind of balls of fat with the plastic nets around them. You have to really be quite important to keep feeders clean and to keep bird tables clean. I can't emphasize that enough because there's diseases like trichomoniasis and pararia pox and stuff like that that affect birds' feet if you didn't keep it clean. That I mentioned regular water. I hear a bird bath. I keep it clean. And in the frosty weather, I go out with a kettle of boiling water in the morning and put that on it. I like to mix the feeding. I don't keep feeding the same thing all the time. You know, I'll change the feed. I'll change the balance of it. And I never put food out when there's food lying there already. I wait till the wee scoundrels have eaten a lot and cleared it up. If they didn't eat their supper, they're not getting anywhere. There's a lot of different trees and shrubs that you can use. Anything that produces fruit, like firethorn or honeysuckle or hollies, or you know, even things like teasels and thistles and frutigus and elderberries, knotweed. You know, I think the big message is don't be using pesticides. Create shelter near your feeders. Another wee trick, I've seen me get a dried teasel head and dip the niger seed in that, and then just stick the teasel head in among the herbaceous plants. It looks awful natural, and the birds come and sit on it. And another thing, just don't be over fussy about it. If you get a few green fly and stuff about the bit, you know, leave them for the blue tits. The blue tits will soon clean them up. Moving your feeders about the garden is another good thing to do, you know. And another one of my top tips, it's not really connected specifically with birds, but if you've got stinging nettles in the garden and rough patches of the garden, don't be cutting them down. They're a very important food for the caterpillars or butterflies, like the red admirals and the small tortoiseshell and the painted lady. You know, there's plenty you can do. Think before you act and act consistently. Treat the birds as your friends. I mean, I get about 35 to 40 different kinds of birds in my city garden all year round.
That's quite a lot. I am speaking about the fat bars. I've got the fat bars in a wire cage. You ken if it happened. A craw is repeatedly coming down, picking up the wire cage and carrying it off. Think you mark of that.
I'll tell you what I did last year. I got about a half inch board and I made a fancy kind of, well, it's like a bat-shaped thing where I put the wire feeder, I screwed it on at the top, and then it's got a bit sticking down below it, and I put three wee bars on it. It's actually a woodpecker feeder. You'll get designs online, you can see them. By that foxes them. The woodpecker loves light. He comes and sits on that. But they magpies, and they're related to the craws, those boys, they boys are greedy. They can eat half a yen of these blocks in the morning.
Oh, goodness.
They're rich scoundrels, but they're off a bonnie mine. I didn't chase them away.
But again, they're coming in with the pheasant's eggs. I've got a batch of pheasants that teen up residents in my garden as well. And, of course, the jackies and the magpies are having a ball in the pheasant eggs. It's sad, but it's nature. Red in tooth and claw, as they say. Okay, again, with reference to the up-and-coming environmental summit in Glasgow in November, David Attenborough will be attending in his new official role as the People's Advocate, and he'll be trying to inspire world leaders and members of the public, like us, to be more environmentally friendly in our gardens. Okay, you've heard from Dave's doing. Steve, what are you doing to be more environmentally friendly in your garden?
I suppose my shtick is, as many of you can, I'm about kind of local food and that kind of thing. So mostly what I'm doing in the allotment is growing kind of local varieties of apples and berries and tatties. I get my seed tatties for along the road. Literally, we found out that we bide about 12 mile away from one of the biggest seed tatty producers in the hill of the UK.
Wow.
So we've got them in. One of the things we do at home is we have the water butt coming off of the garage, and we try and use as much rainwater just because it's better for the plants as well.
Mm-hmm.
No really fun a solution for that up at the allotment, unfortunately. There is kind of open topped water butts there, but they didn't really gather that much water, so no sure what to do there. One of the things I found out over the weekend when trying to get ahead of compost is that there's a nationwide shortage of peat free compost now. So I spotted yesterday at one of the German supermarkets that they've got a new bunch in, so I'll be scooting away after the show to get some there. So peat-free compost is what we've been trying to use, but it's been a bit difficult the last few weeks with Abdi just getting into their gardens. Same as Dave, didn't use pesticides. We get green fly on with apple trees, but I tend to use the kind of sticky strips that you can get to keep the ants away. Otherwise, again, going to be a wee paintbrush and just tack off most of the green fly. Because if you didn't tack it off, it impedes the kind of growth of the blossom. Apart from that, aye. Trying to be as gentle as we can and no use things over much in excess.
Good for you, Steve. Claire?
Aye, so just probably much the same. We feed the birds all year round. A few things that Dave was saying about the things you can feed them. So we do something with the kids. We get big pine cones and a wee bit of natural peanut butter that doesn't have any salt and sugar added to it, and sort of smear that on and dip them in seeds, and you can hang them up in the trees or in the hedgerow.
A great idea.
And that's something that's good fun for the kids as well.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing is, especially when the nesting season was starting, we always made sure when we brushed the dog, we brush him outside, because is the fluff from the dog is great, I think, for nests. And the birds come and whip it up, take it away to line their nests.
You're absolutely right, because, of course, I've got the twa rascals, the Bichons, and they need clipped quite a lot because they've got curly hair. And hair just disappears. Like, I clip them outside. Hair just disappears, just away to the birdies. Right, I'm organic, or I try and be as organic as I can. Didn't use pesticides or herbicides. In the greenhouse especially, in that environment can be difficult to manage. I grow a lot of tagetes and marigolds, all the way through planting tagetes, or tagetes as we call it up here, tagetes and marigolds, all the way through the greenhouse, and the beasties didn't like the smell of that. I didn't have a problem with one thing that resembles white fly or green fly in my salads, because I grow a lot of salads. And as I said, in the heat, it would just be a perfect environment. And I did hit trouble to begin with, but tagetes and marigolds are the answer.
Mm.
Outside, I'm using a biodegradable covering that I'm using for the first time, just a black strip that just biodegrades into the soil, and or I can heave it up and put it into my compost heap. It's just like a roll of footy we used to call formisol, but it's near plastic. It's a biodegradable roll of stuff. So I'm hearing a lot of success with that. And for instance, I put it around the edges of different things because I'm creating a different planting area out the back of the piggery, as we call it. But I didn't hate pigs if we're on the asked. But it's a planting area that I'm just planting up. And I've planted a lot of trees this year. I've got 250 trees to plant, and I've planted about 100. And then, of course, the weather broke, and I'm now waiting for September again. And that brings me to the next question I'm about to ask Dave and Minty. But we're planting as many trees as I can for birds and wildlife. And on that note, I've only seen two swallows coming back. We used to hear hordes of swallows coming back at this time of year. Nothing. And there's been a lot of trees, old beech trees, being teened down around about where I bide at the moment. I don't know if that's made an awful difference to the swallows, but there's certainly nae as many appearing at the moment. So all of that put together is my managed, name managed, but try and help wildlife through at the gardens. So I'm coming to Dave again. We're planting bare root trees, just about finished, but are we still in time to plant potted fruit trees, Dave?
Containerized plants, Frida, you can really plant them virtually all year round, but personally, I like to get it done before the end of June. That way the plant gets a chance to mark root and get itself established somewhat before the onset of autumn. You know, so there's plenty of time to do it. Make sure you remove all the weeds, and if you're putting it in a lawn, remove the grass. Dig a hole as deep as the pot and at least twice as wide. Tuck the pot off and put the plant in the hole, and make sure the top of the surface of where the soil was in the pot is flush or slightly above the level of the ground in your site. Put half the soil back in and the other half of the soil get shot at, add a wee bit of plant and compost. Me, I like to put in a wee bit of grow more or something like Osmocote. Don't forget to support the tree and use a proper buckle tie, yin that can be adjusted with a spacer in it so the tree doesn't get chaffed. And mind, that stake's only needing to be there about 12 months. Mm-hmm. If you're planting in the summer, make sure you give the tree a really good soak by pouring the water directly at the root base. And if you're doing that, just keep an eye on the watering for the first two or three months, especially if we get a hot summer. Right. All in all, you've still got time, but personally, I like to get my fruit trees in. If I'm doing them out of containers, I like them in by the middle of June. That way you'll get, I think they're better established for next year.
Thank you very, 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 very much for all of your advice there. Now we're into the darling buds of May, and they cast in clutch yet. Mine, the coat, then I cast a clutch till maybe out. Refers to the May flower, of course, near the month. But, oh, the colours and the blossom. I was watching the honeybees and the gein blossom in my wee woody the other day. Get your head geed. And, of course, we're just past Beltane again, the ancient festival that heralds in the summer. Ah, summer. Our programme cook, Claire Patterson, has been creating her culinary wonders again. Geez, your next two recipes. Claire.
Well, the next one, Frida, we've got a nice frittata, which is perfect for a light meal with some of those lovely spring salad leaves that are all coming just now. That are grown away, which are absolutely delicious. So this is a frittata with some tatties, some spinach, and a wee bit of feta cheese. So I use a small, deep, non-stick frying pan. That takes about eight eggs worth, which would probably be enough for six medium-hungry people. But you can adjust it according to the size of your pan or how many mouths you've got to feed or how many eggs you've got. So you just mix together some sliced, wild new potatoes, some wilted spinach, a few chopped spring onions, about maybe half a pack of crumbled feta cheese, eight whisked up eggs and a good bit of salt and pepper. And speaking about the wild garlic earlier, if I had any of that, I'd probably chuck a bit of that in as well. And then basically put a wee bit of oil in your pan, give it a swirl so the sides are coated too so it will not stick. And then in goes your egg mixture and over quite a low heat. Cook it till the sides are starting to set and just starting to colour. And then that goes into a medium oven for about 10 or 15 minutes until it's set all the way through. And that's great hot or cold or room temperature or just great to have in the fridge just for when you're needing a wee something.
Oh, gosh, a wee something. I'm dreaming of fruit salad. Remember fruit salad?
Oh, aye. So the next one here I've got, Frida, is we're still waiting for the strawberries to ripen. We've got fruit, but they're not ripe yet. So this is good for filling that hole until the berries arrive. So this is a rhubarb mess. So it's a mixture of baked rhubarb with a wee bit of crushed meringues, cream and Greek yogurt. And so for the rhubarb, I trim it, chop it into short lengths, add sugar to taste, so quite a lot of sugar. And the thing I always do, every rhubarb recipe, especially this time of year, is I'll stick a wee slug of grenadine in because that helps bring the pinkness back because it goes a wee bit kind of, you know, it's not the most appetizing colour once you're out of the very first rhubarb.
Yeah.
And that goes in the oven, medium oven, until it's tender, and I'll set it aside to cool. For the meringues, for something a wee bit different, instead of white sugar, I use half golden caster sugar and half light brown sugar or light muscovado. So that gives you a really caramelly, darker meringue, which is great with the rhubarb. So for two egg whites, whisk up to the soft peat stage and then gradually add in 4 ounces of whatever sugar you're using. Then whisk till you get a nice stiff peak onto a lined baking sheet and big dollops. and then bake it at about 110 Celsius for about an hour or until it's crisp and it'll lift off the tray. Then to put it all together, whisk up half Greek yogurt, half double cream, with a wee bit of vanilla so till it holds its shape, and then fold through your cooled rhubarb and your crumbled meringues, and that's a rhubarb mess.
A rhubarb mess. I tell you, it would be a fine mess if I started it.
I tell you, that would give the on-eating mess a run for its money on any day.
Mm. Oh, my. Did you hear the silence behind you as you did that?
Can't get a word
there in. There wasn't a rustle or anything. Concentration.
I tell you what, Claire, that's on the menu when we meet up.
Aye, absolutely. Oh, absolutely.
The big meet-up. Started already, dropping hints. Okay, thank you for that, Claire. I'm going to go back to the last recorded question. Again, the Braemar Primary School, and again, the Gail Nixon. Here it comes.
We have got a wee bit of a question about our tatties that were grown in our garden at school. The problem is, we started them inside for seed tatties, and now we've put them outside as stalks of our dyed bark, and we're just wondering, what can we do about it? Is there anything we can do about it? Are we going to get tatties for them? Or once the stalks have kind of died back, I think because of the frost, is that it? And there's nothing we can do. Could you let us ken and give some advice, please? Thank you.
Dave?
Well, it really depends just how kind of black they are. If the edges of the leaves, if it's just the edges that have been nipped, I'd just let them be. There's a good chance they'll be fine. But if they're kind of bad, you could earth them up a wee bit of mare, covering the lugs that are poking out of the ground. Another wee trick is to put white gardening fleece over the top of them when you think there's a chance of the frost. But in this case, that's shutting the door after the horse is bolted. If they're off a block, you could cut the black bits off below the soil. But if it was me, I would leave them. And there's some folk would say, just leave them altogether. There's a chance that they'll be fine. They'll just be a wee bit of later. But for me, for going forward, for next year, I would make sure, binding in on cold air, weary day, that you've a bit of that horticultural fleece. And when you plant them out, earth them up and just put a wee bit of fleece over the top and tuck it in the soil, just to give them a wee chance in case you get a chucket storm or twa.
A chucket storm or twa. We've had a few chucket storms, I can tell you. Right, thank you for that, Gail, and thank you for that, Dave. I was watching the honeybees, as I said, on the dean tree blossom, doing them a wee woody. What a sight that was, and the sound was beautiful. On that note, what a rare treat I had this week. I got a present for the bees in the garden hive, some cut comb honey. Dave, you like cut comb honey, do you?
Oh, I do that.
All right, so special. The honey in the actual wax comb, and this is heather honey, mind, the very best. We just enjoy the best of it. Now, let me remind you again of a book I highly recommend. The Bee Garden by Maureen Little. How to Create or Adapt a Garden to Attract and Nurture Bees. Published by Spring Hill, price £16.99. Look up email at info@howtobooks.co.uk, and I really, really recommend this book. And since we were speaking about Scots words for birds, continuing on that theme, I recommend Wilson's Ornithology and Birds in Scots by Hamish MacDonald, published by Scotland Street Press. And of course, we have the Scots Dictionary of Nature by Amanda Thompson, published by Sarah Band, price £12.99. And she even has words that describes splooshing about in mud, splurrach. And Dave, you've got another one you'd like to recommend as well.
I do, Frieda. I have both of the two you've mentioned on the shelf, and I use them frequently. Again, they're good, but there's another one. It's called A Guide to Scots Birds' Name, and it was written by Robin Jackson and published by Ptarmigan Press in Banchory in 1996, and it was revised and redone again in 2013. It's a wee bit hard to find now, but keep a lookout for it because it's an awful good guide. Right. It's easy to use, so snap it up if you see it.
I've got a copy, in fact. And I recommend the Dictionaries of the Scots Language, www.dsl.ac.uk and info@dsl.ac.uk. Highly recommended again. And yet, ladies and gentlemen, brings us to the end of this, our first virtual Gairdning programme, Grow Radio 2021. Ray! And my brain fog wasn't that obvious, I hope, was it?
You're fine,
kind of
Frieda.
Came and went a bit. There was no comments like, she's lost the plot again. Now, can I invite you to get in contact with us, either via email, iPhone, or our new super duper record button on our webpage with your Gairdning questions. We would like to hear fae. And remember, we are your Gairdning buds, so don't be afraid to get in contact with us. Name it if you've just started. I've been there, and I hope you've enjoyed our first Danner doing the Gairdning. Dinner put off, get in touch. Here's the email address to send your emails and your phone recordings. Email info@growradio.com, info@growradio.com, and you can find our record button on our webpage, www.growradio.com. So, on behalf of the team, Dave Mitchell, Richie Werner, Claire Patterson, Steve Byrne, Finn Nixon, programme manager in the background, and myself, Frieda Morrison, enjoy your gear.